this is another session in our series on the laws of life. We're working with the various, the primary divine laws as defined in the Alice Bailey books, in the writings of the Tibetan. And we're working with the law of economy tonight. So our question is, what is the law of economy and how can aspirants best harness it? And I've shuffled the cards and laid them out and created the spread. And you see it up there on the screen, unless you're doing this by telephone, and then you would have to have X-ray vision to see it. But the starting point is the chariot, upside down. The chariot's number 7 in the major arcana. The counterpoint is the star, right side up. The star is 17 or 8 in the major arcana. The challenge is the four of pentacles, right side up. The purpose is the ace of pentacles, right side up. The what comes before the destiny? The
endowment.
Oh, the endowment. Yes, the endowment is 5 of rods, right side up. The destiny is the 2 of swords, upside down. Then we come to the pillar of revelation. We have the 7 of rods in the position of the real question. Page of swords in the position of hidden resources or hidden forces. The 4 of cups is in the position of the spiritual ideal. And the 10 of pentacles is our culmination. So we have 7 upright, 3 reverse cards. We have 2 majors being the first 2 cards, which indicates the importance of the topic. 2 rods, 2 swords, 2 rods, 1 cup, and 3 pentacles. The 3 pentacles dominate the spread because the law of economy is the way in which spirit manages matter, the material plane. In the Tibetans' approach to things, there are 3 primary laws of divine life. The 3 great laws are the law of synthesis, the law of attraction, and the law of economy. The law of economy is what gives us control over the physical plane. The law of attraction is, it gives us the ability to work with consciousness, and the law of synthesis gives us the ability to work with spirit, the monadic level. So tonight we're working with the law of economy, physical plane. Hence, pentacles, 3 pentacles. Next time, 2 weeks from now, we'll talk about the law of attraction. And then the final time, or not the final time, but 2 weeks after that, we'll talk about the law of synthesis. So we'll get these 3 in a row here. And then we'll go on to other things, other laws. The law of economy... enables us to evolve with the least expenditure of energy. Now, that may seem like still a great deal of energy being expended because we evolve over a vast period of time. Dion Fortune speculates that everybody has 600 lives. And so it's over a long period of time, but you have to keep in mind that that's only a fragment of time in terms of the time allotted for the whole of creation. So from a divine perspective, as we learn to interact with matter and learn to control it with the least expenditure of energy, the least amount of strain and grunting and groaning and moaning, then we're harnessing the law of economy. The law of economy operates whether we're aware of it or not. In the animal kingdom, for example, we can see instinct. We can see instinct in the vegetable kingdom, where so many plants and flowers demonstrate and exhibit the golden mean. We can find instinct even in the mineral kingdom. And that's the law of economy working automatically in our own bodies. Our heartbeat, our respiration, our nervous system, all these things operate automatically with very little need for conscious control. However, as we grow in consciousness, our capacity to control and direct the matter of our bodies depends entirely upon our ability to work with the law of economy. So I'm going to approach this session in that context. We will talk about the larger implications of the law of economy, but we'll talk about it in terms of how we develop intelligence to replace instinct. And then eventually that sets us up for synthesis. I'm going to, there seems to be some feedback here, so I'm going to mute for a while. We will start with the starting point, good place, although I seldom do. This is the Chariot. The Chariot is the seventh card in the Major Arcana. It is this tremendous furnace of energy, which is fed with the residue of the ancient past. And it, in the heart of it is the issue of duality. Of course, we can see the happy face and the sad face, the face of comedy and the face of tragedy up there. And the stasis of divine energy at the very top of the card as it goes through the star at the ajna of the character there. This is symbolizes the beginning of creation, the involution, the release of involutionary energy, which then goes out to the outer ring past knot and then makes its way back to the center, and that's what we call evolution. So this is the expulsion of matter from the core, from the center, matter that has been conditioned in an earlier system, but now is going to serve a new creative purpose. And this is all tied up with the mystery of the Word. In the beginning, there was the Word. The Word was God, the Word was with God, etc., etc. And so the divine creator sounds the word, Aum, and creation occurs. It occurs through this outward sounding of the Word. And so we're setting up a pattern of resonance, a pattern of ever expanding circles, ripples in the lake, so to speak. And they go out, and then we bring them back in as we learn and grow in management of this. So one of the points here is one of the key points is that the law of economy is central to the effective management of matter, which also means energy. Physics has taught us that through the principle of conservation of energy, energy can become matter and matter can be converted into energy, but nothing is ever lost. That is a perfect example of the law of economy. Nothing is ever lost. In the divine system of creation, nothing is ever wasted or lost. That's the principle, that's the law of economy. Now you might say, well, hey, every night I haul out garbage and put it in the garbage can and then take it out to the incinerator and burn it up. What do you mean nothing is ever lost? Well, of course, it's garbage to you, but it's recycled energy to when you put it in the incinerator and burn it up, and it's converted into heat. So nothing is ever lost. It may be lost to you in a sense of personal loss, but that's an illusion that can't exist in part of reality. The reality of life is nothing is lost. And that includes your friends who die and the people who betray you and principles that are shattered and sullied and nothing's ever lost. It becomes the material for something new to be built on. And if we can establish this as one of our key values and ethics, one of our key forces of understanding, nothing is ever lost, we'll understand so much more and have so much less confusion. Now, there's the illusion of loss when two baseball or football or basketball teams play each other and one wins and one loses. There is an illusion of loss on the part of the losers. And sometimes that means the loss of quite a bit of money in professional sports. When one gambles and loses, there's certainly a loss. But from the point of view of spirit, all this is just incidental. It's not loss, it's merely transferred. You lost $10,000 on your bet, somebody else won it. See, it's been transferred. So, in fact, because we just worked with the law of expanding response, we know that as we enrich life on Earth, the economy actually expands, using the term economy very loosely to refer to a financial economy or the economy of a household. You know, when I decided to start Aerial Press in 1975, there was nothing. There were no books. There were no manuscripts. There was no money. There was nothing. Zip, zero, nada, except the fact that I knew Dr. Lykman and I had various books in us that were just waiting to break out, break forth, and get into print. And now, 37 years later, we have about 180 books in print. That's creating something out of nothing. That's the law of expansive response, an illustration of it, that we talked about last time. The law of economy comes in and says, okay, we have a block of time here. We have insights and understanding, and let's write about them and translate these thoughts, these thought energies and insights into books and CDs and whatnot. So this is using the law of economy. We could have said, well, you know, yeah, we got great ideas and insights, and it would be nice to do that sometime, maybe next lifetime. And we kicked the football down the road, kicked the can down the road, as they say. Well, that would not be using the law of economy, because we have... It's the old story that many of you heard me use many times. The Nasruddin story. He goes into a general store. He says, do you have string? And the guy says, yes. And he says, do you have leather? Yeah, fine leather. Do you have nails? Yeah, hammers? Yeah. Well, why don't you make yourself a boot? Sell shoes. And you can have all the resources, but the human being has to do something which creates something out of apparently nothing. And this is the law of economy. As we build talents and skills, we translate them in. I mean, a simple example would be a farmer who has unplowed land, goes out, cleans away the rocks, levels it out, plows it, plants it, and grows food, where there was only wilderness before. That's the law of economy, you see. He's making use of his resources, his opportunities. So a cat or a dog or any animal doesn't have that capacity to organize and create something out of nothing. A cat may be a good hunter, a dog may be a faithful companion, etc., but they're responding to their instinct. They can't improvise and create something new on Earth except through the long process of the evolution of the species. We individuals, we humans, have the capacity, through the law of economy, to impose direction on our physical, emotional, and mental bodies so that we become more sophisticated, more refined, more in control, and more productive and creative. So the chariot, to get back to the chariot, now that I've had my little riff here, that's the moment of involution. That's the moment of the word going forth and creating instinct so that it can then be organized and brought back in. The matter that we deal with, the substance we deal with, is, as has been explained, left over from an earlier system, an earlier solar system. We're in the process of imprinting it with love and grace and goodwill and wisdom and intelligence. And this comes under the law of economy. And this gives us insight into cause and effect and karma and how this works. If we understand this, then we can see that the opportunity, you know, there's what I frequently refer to, and many of you know of, as the if-only syndrome. Somebody will say, well, if only I had been born with $100,000, I'd be a wealthy man now. Probably not. You probably would have gambled it all away. But the point is, it's not what we start with that counts. It's what we are able to create out of nothing. And if we get an inheritance, that's just a leg up. But it's our capacity to create something, mobilize matter, that makes things work. Every opportunity that comes to us, every condition, every factor, is an important element in the creative work that we're to do, in our capacity to harness the law of economy. Because the challenge is not what can we do with everything handed to us. The challenge is what can we do to organize the wilderness? What can we do to organize wildness, tameness, tame the wilderness? So I may be getting a little bit ahead of myself here, but I'll do it anyway. My point here is that there is no chance. Everything that we do in evolution is the result of involution. Our capacity to do it increases as we master the law of economy. And so this is very important. But what this means is whatever is happening to us, whatever events come to us, we're not supposed to waste it. And in fact, nothing is wasted. People will often say, oh, an 8-year-old child dies of, you know, whatever, hit by a car. What a waste. Well, what a denigration of that child's life. How do we dare have the arrogance and presumption to say that that's a waste? Nothing's wasted in this life. The child was undoubtedly learning something extremely important, or made a sacrifice so that his or her parents could learn something extremely important. There is no waste. Somebody tries to have a baby and it miscarries. That's not a waste. It can't be within this system and within the law of economy. It is an illusion that it's a waste. And in the same way, somebody who is 90 years old and is suffering from Alzheimer's and can't seem to make sense of anything. We're tending to say, oh, what a waste of potential. They had such a great mind, and now it's just that they're off in loony land somewhere. It's not a waste. It's an experience. It's an experience perhaps we don't understand, but we should never think of anything as a waste. We should never think of any setback as a setback, but rather as an opportunity to move forward. We should never view anything in our life. And what's really a waste is if we have an opportunity and then we get angry or blow up or panic or fall apart emotionally and aren't able to harness the opportunity, that is a waste of opportunity. But even then, it just means that we'll repeat it until we do learn this. And so it's not a waste, it's part of a learning experience. The law of economy works through repetition until we develop skills that let us enrich the life around us with the least expenditure of energy. Not the most complex, not the most bizarre and Byzantine expression of something, but the least expenditure of energy. So this sets the tone here. We have to understand that the law of economy works at a completely impersonal level. And until we're able to harness it with that level of impersonality, we are not going to be in control of it. We're not going to be able to use it intelligently. We'll be using it at the level of instinct rather than the level of intelligence. All right, then we come to the star, the counterpoint here. We have the star, number 8 in the arcana, and number 17, but an 8. The star is a bright star with gold, with orange and black and purple and stuff, and then directly underneath him, a peacock or a phoenix or whatever, rising up out of the earth, transforming the substance into something that is a vehicle of consciousness. Notice all that jagged artwork at the bottom, all those jagged points. That substance itself that is being drawn up into that swirl of energy, the feathers of the bird, and becoming part of the bird. This symbolizes the fact that we draw our physical bodies, our emotions, and our mind from the substance of life itself. We draw them from angelic substance and from the earth itself, dust into dust. And in the process of organizing our system and developing our talents and skills and coordination, we come into conscious control of that energy. We dedicate that energy to acts of charity, helpfulness, wisdom, creativity, etc. So in both the chariot and the star, there is this redemption of substance, the enlightening of substance, so that it becomes something greater. This is, the law of economy allows us to do this. The law of economy sets it up so that we can do this. The principle of the star here is resonance. God sounds forth the Aum, the word, creation is launched. We learn through the use of the sense of hearing and its correspondence, intuition, we learn to respond. I listen and I hear. I respond. I incorporate the patterns of spirit into my own personal subconscious and character. And in that way, I develop skills and talents that coordinate the matter of Earth, my little portion of it. And when humanity's doing this all across the fruited plain and beyond, it elevates and redeems the matter of Earth. It enlightens Earth. So we have to approach the law of economy as that aspect of divine providence that gives us exactly what we need, exactly what we've earned. And it's a waste of time to go out and occupy Wall Street. They've largely given up doing that anyway, but it's a waste of time to do that because it's not going to change the fact that you're not mastering substance. You're not enlightening the world around you. You're on the take. You're trying to take, which is building up more a larger and larger karmic bill. It does absolutely no good to riot in the streets of Benghazi and kill people, because that just adds to your karmic tab. And in this particular case, the people of Libya apparently have figured that one out, because they've now protested and told the terrorists to get the heck out, to leave Libya permanently, never come back. And so this is the dynamic of the law of economy. I'm going to take off the mute here and ask, entertain any comments or questions before I go on. Any comments or questions thus far? All right. Well, let's go ahead. The third card is the Four of Pentacles. This has been appearing quite a bit in all of our explorations. The Four of Pentacles is an individual with a big pentacle at the head, big pentacle at the heart, two pentacles at each hand, and in balance. This is a card that demonstrates the coordination of energy flowing from spirit to heart to hands, and its impact at, in terms of controlling the environment around this individual. So this is a card that suggests rhythm and balance. The origin of the law of economy is rhythm. As God sounds forth the word, it imposes a rhythm on all energies, specifically on archetypal energies, but eventually we come along and become aware of archetypal energies and download them and then control the energies in our system. So the idea here is that we contact love or joy or justice. Look at human life. The whole drama of human life is we strive for justice. We think of this as we need to think of it as justness, not punishment. For a long time, justice has been punishment, as in Sharia law. Now we're beginning to move away from that and establishing justness in terms of righteousness. And this is a good development. But this is where the human component comes in. God can impose the patterns of rhythm and balance on the archetypes. We have to respond to the archetypes, as in the star, and through resonance bring them down into our life and then impose them on our mental energy, emotional energy, and physical matter. Not just within our own systems, but gradually within our household. An example of this would be in the very fact that as you live in a house, say you live in a house for 40 years, during that period of time, you are filling that house with rhythmic patterns, with resonances. They may be, if you lack control emotionally, these patterns may be anger, grimness, pessimism, depression, hopelessness. And those become ingrained, literally, in the walls and the floors and the ceilings. But if you are more mentally oriented and working to integrate with spirit, your meditations will illuminate the walls and the floors. Something that's best demonstrated in homes where saints have lived, or saintly people, and they just have a permanent radiance, a permanent aura of their saintly qualities. So we're not just limited to transforming our own mental, emotional, and physical energy. We can transform and enlighten the very substance, the physical substance in our home, in our office, in our community. And this is the work of humanity, is to enlighten life in this way. If we seize upon the opportunities of our daily life to do this, every moment of every day gives us an opportunity to enrich life on earth. And if we do that, first of all, our skills and talents will develop so that we can then do this with the least expenditure of energy. And that is the key to economy. So, we learn to enrich life in whatever we do. Again, the idea is that we begin life with nothing but our what we carry on our back, our karma and our talents. And then we see what can we do to enrich this. Not necessarily in terms of work, in personal relationships. Who do we love? Who can we support and help? What work can we contribute? What can we volunteer? The possibilities are endless. Now, one of the issues of the nature of matter as we encounter it is that matter always follows the line of least resistance. And if we follow the line of least resistance, then we're controlled and enslaved by matter. An example of this would be somebody who develops a taste for drink and becomes an alcoholic. That's following the line of least resistance. In many cases, it's following the line of no resistance. Obviously, the law of economy is the exact opposite of that. The law of economy is the capacity of us, whatever pride or self-respect or love we have, we confront ourselves. We look in the mirror and say, I'm a drunk. And I don't want to be that way anymore. So we take steps to control the pool of alcoholism. In other words, we use the law of economy to counteract the pool of least resistance, the line of least resistance. And this is in many of these cards, not in these particular cards, except for the star, but in many of these cards, there's these downward swirls of energy. Well, it's over in the Two of Swords, too. Her hair is this flowing, luxurious hair, which is following the line of least resistance. And we need to understand that the law of economy is to impose intelligence on our use of energy. And that's a theme that can then help us in our use of economics, in our handling of finances, in our handling of opportunities, whatever it might be. We come then to the fourth card, the Ace of Pentacles. This is in the position of purpose. And in this particular reading, this Ace of Pentacles represents peace. The successful use of the law of economy really is what lets us establish peace on earth. Not just peace on earth, but peace in earth. Because we're transforming substance itself so that it doesn't fight against us. And therefore, the law of economy is paramount to our capacity to manage obstacles that we come across, opportunities, problems, conditions, unexpected surprises, bizarre turns of events, and so on. It's the key to right timing. The person who doesn't use the law of economy, who hasn't built up experience in this, is a victim of time, or seems to think so. They never have enough time. They're always out of sync. They're always late. They're always whatever. As we develop the law of economy, we begin to appreciate the value of precision in all that we do, matching our thought, our words spoken and written with precise thoughts, matching our commitments with the time that is available to us, and so on. And so as we go through the process of repetitively learning the lessons of human life, we create, we learn this law of economy and how to work against deadlines without being overwhelmed by them, how to take the pressures of daily life and establish peace. One of the issues here is that we're dealing with wholeness. You look at the Ace of Pentacles, that's an entire pentacle. It's not a split pentacle. It's not half a pentacle or three quarters of a pentacle. And this implies that when you deal with something like the economy or the flow of opportunity in the human race, you have to keep in mind the whole constitution of this picture. You can't understand it by a little bit here and a little bit there. The economy is going to work. We need to step back and harness it, not impose our opinions upon it. And the more we try to meddle with the economy and trick it and manipulate it individually and as a nation and as a world, the more trouble we get ourselves into. I was just reading a column by Thomas Sowell today, the economist, and he was saying that when Warren Harding became president, he inherited an unemployment rate of almost 12%. And within 2 years, he had cut that down to 2.6%. How did he do it? According to Sowell, he did nothing. He just made sure the government didn't get in the way of the economy recovering. He let the economy work without imposing all kinds of tricks and gimmicks and gizmos and this, which just stalled the recovery. And within, now he did cut the federal budget by 50%. So he got the federal house in order, but he let the economy take care of itself. He allowed business to go out and create opportunity. And that's what restores peace and order. You appreciate the whole pie, the whole picture. You don't try to tinker with little parts and elements. All right. Any comments or questions thus far? Well, let me go on then. We come to the endowment, and we have the Five of Rods, which is four guys and five rods, and they're either involved in some elaborate dance, modern dance that we can't understand, or they're about to clobber the guy in the middle, beat him up. And what this is a card that, when correctly used, indicates cooperation, as in a dance, where you get very complex elements all working smoothly together so that they're serving the common purpose talked about in the Ace of Pentacles. You get everybody attuned to and resonating to the whole. The perfect example of this would be a symphony orchestra, where you all have to be in tune and playing the same piece of music. If everybody's playing a different piece of music, it's chaos. You may each be playing your piece of music wonderfully well, but the overall result is noise. So this is the process of of learning to expand one's talents to manage ever more complex elements and conditions. And the key is cooperation. In one sense, it could be even considered the survival of the fittest through cooperation, because even the fittest can't survive if there aren't people helping them. This is where we recognize the illusion of partial understanding. One way that the law of economy is described is we go through a series of lessons in life, which teach us that the first lesson teaches us about the illusion of the physical plane, and we learn this through being an alcoholic or thinking that everything, you know, physical life is all that there is and whatnot. We go through this and suddenly we break through and we understand, well, that's an illusion, that's false. And then we go through the next stage of illusion, which is a little bit more subtle, and we fall prey to the illusions of the emotions and the illusions of desires. And then we break through those and we can see clearly, and then we get to deal with the illusions of the mind. And there's all these layers of illusion. And with each stage that we break through, we learn a little bit more about managing substance. And finally, through the law of economy, when we've mastered it, we're not confused by life anymore. We understand why these things happen. We understand that there is no waste. We understand the role of karma and cause and effect. And we understand that the idea of unfairness is an illusion. We understand that the things that irritate the Occupy Wall Street people, total illusion. We understand that what motivates the terrorists in Libya and Egypt and wherever, illusion. We understand these things. We understand that the things that motivate so many people in this country, the fame and money and what, all illusions, because you can't take them with you. It's the sort of thing, everything that we've done here with Light and Aeropress, all these 160 books or 180 books or whatever we've written and CDs and everything, I can't take a one of them with me. Of course, we can take the mental equivalents of them with us. They're there permanently. And so everything we do during any life on Earth is what we leave behind as our legacy, either for somebody else to clean up if it's negativity, or for as a blessing upon Earth. And we should, and that's true of our creative work, of our professional work, of our raising our children. You can see it the most dynamic dynamically in raising children, because they're an instant legacy. The moment they become adults, even sooner sometimes, they're then either contributing or being a drag on human life. So that's the endowment. The endowment is the learning to cooperate and learning the skills of being part of a much larger picture. Then we come to the card of destiny, the Two of Swords. And, of course, the Two of Swords is, we've seen her a number of times. It's a unclothed woman, blindfolded, her hair flowing out to forever. And artfully positioned behind large I don't know what you call them, large monolithic issues of residue from the past. That's what we're busy transforming. Anyway, there's these two swords going up like a rabbit's ear to spirit. So this brings us to the subject of duality. And in many ways, the law of economy is the process of of what I talk about with duality, learning to put the duality, any duality, on the baseline and then looking for the apex. And then you've combined the wholeness of the Ace of Pentacles with the duality of the Two of Swords, and suddenly you have the law of economy, that you can see that the expression of whatever archetypal force is at the apex requires both the pro and the con on the baseline. It requires both progress and regression. It requires both give and take. It requires supply and demand. Whatever you put on the baseline, it requires both of them in order to create wholeness. And so the law of economy teaches us the incredible dynamic of duality, that this is the way in which providence acts on earth. It creates every time you add something new, as we'll see over on the Four of Cups, it splits into duality, and then we have to put it back together again. And in the process of doing that, we enlighten the substance involved. So this is an incredibly dynamic principle here. Understanding the law of economy, working consciously with it, gives the aspirant the opportunity to harness the duality of life. Okay, those are our first six cards. We have set the stage here. Any comments or questions before I go in for the kill? The Pillar of Revelation. Anybody?
Carl, I was thinking when you were talking about timing and life and things working out and, you know, always having, you mentioned a while back, the right amount of time to do everything.
Speak up a little bit. You're mumbling here.
I don't know if you can hear me now with this fullness, but it truly is. I was thinking that when you ask for the ideal, that you're really drawing in the law of karma, and then that just seemed to make sense what you were saying, because creativity and splitting it into a duality, and then you're bringing things back together with the wholeness. All of that is working with the idea, correct?
Well, the point. Okay, I'm getting quite a little bit of feedback here, so I'm going to mute for a moment. The idea here is that the law of economy gives us the key to all healing, all blessing, all any work that brings heaven to earth utilizes the law of economy, because it is the law of economy that gives us the ability to imprint matter with spirit. So healing would be totally impossible without the law of economy, because we wouldn't be able to bring in the living energies of spirit and imprint it upon an ailing form. The same principle follows in terms of creative work, in terms of blessing, in terms of leadership, in terms of working with a financial economy, whether it's national or international or whatever. Unless we're able to free up the dualities involved so that they work cooperatively, we can never be in control of the situation. Financially, that means we need to recognize that any financial system works cyclically, and therefore there are times of prosperity and times of retrenchment. There are times of moving forward and times when of correction, when excesses are worked out. This is a biblical principle, the seven fat cows and the seven lean cows. 7 years of feast, 7 years of famine. It's a well-known principle. And you have to have both of them, or the economy stalls. It goes back to the chariot and just hits a wall of stasis and goes nowhere. It stagnates. So, yes, absolutely. This is the important thing, is to be able to see the picture as a whole rather than parts to be tinkered with. Does that answer your question?
You have to unmute it.
I did. No, oh, I thought I did. Yeah. Did that answer your question, Mimi?
Yes.
Good. All right, let's go on. I'm going to mute again. We have the Pillar of Revelation here. We have the first card in it is the Seven of Rods. Seven of Rods is our husbandman, our forester. It looks like he's wearing wood. And he's the responsive husbandman. He's responding to the Ace of Pentacles or to the ideal. And he's raising up and elevating these rods. They're like little saplings. And some of them, three of them are at a lower level and three of them are at a higher level. And that indicates that there's the physical, the emotional, and the mental level. He's using the rod mentally to lift them up. And so he's nurturing. These three levels represent the three primary laws that the Tibetan talked about. The lower level is the law of economy. The middle level is the law of attraction. And the higher level is horizontal crossbar, is the law of synthesis. So he embodies all three of these. For our purposes, for this reading, how is the law of, what is the law of economy and how can aspirants best harness it? In this position, we're talking about the real question. So what are the questions to ask? The question is, what am I lacking at each moment in order to imprint matter with spirit? What am I missing? What do I need of spirit that will nurture these levels, physical, emotional, and mental? And make a, and how do I imprint that in a affirmative way in the substance I'm working with, the matter I'm working with? Now, that's obviously a very complex issue, which will become more and more profound. But what it suggests is that every moment of every day, whether we're at work or at play, whether we're in the comfort of our home or out in the outer world, every moment of every day, we have an opportunity to automatically or consciously enrich what we're doing with spirit. And the ultimate use of the law of economy is to be constantly doing our Father's work, constantly attending to our Father's work. That's being in harmony with the law of economy. Always trying to download and bless the work we're doing, heal the imperfections, impose the ideal, establish peace. And frankly, this is a great advertisement for the class on the graces, because that's nine ways of accomplishing this right here. But that's the real question. What are we drawing in from spirit that we can use to enrich life on earth at this moment? We then move to the eighth card in the spread, the Unseen Forces. This is the Page of Swords. The Page of Swords, again, is an expert at managing conflict. The chevron design of his shoulder there is similar to the same design in the Chariot. And so the Page of Swords is a inexperienced but learning aspirant who goes out and is dedicated to enriching life on earth. And so we need to learn. This is the lesson of learning that all events, every energy on the face of the earth is there for us to uplift, elevate, and make our impression upon. That includes money, it includes sex, it includes time, it includes relationships. It includes self-discipline. Everything we do is something that we can subject to a greater and greater measure of spirit. And the more fully we imprint the force of spirit on substance, the substance of our own mind, emotions, and physical body, character, subconscious, the more we imprint this, then the more we come under control of the law of economy, the more we control the law of economy. And not just for ourselves individually, but then for mass consciousness, the nation as a whole. This then moves us quickly to the spiritual ideal, the ninth card, the Four of Cups, which is one of the most dramatic cards in the whole deck, because here's a hand coming out of the cloud up at the top, bringing a cup, adding that cup to the three that the individual down below sitting under the tree has collected. We take our talents, we build new talents, our lives are goblets that carry the life of spirit into form, and we use it to transform, redeem, and enlighten matter. That's our work. And our work is never ending. If we're sitting in our home stewing and worrying about something, we're not serving the plan of spirit. We're dissipating energy. We're frittering energy away. Now, again, nothing's wasted. So even that turns out to eventually teach us how not to worry. But we should be invoking and working with the ideal of peace. And in the process of that, we are imprinting our own character and the world around us with peace. When the Christ said, "My peace I leave you," he didn't mean that he just left it for your benefit. He leaves it to you so that you can take it and establish peace on earth. This then brings us to the final card, the culmination, the Ten of Pentacles, which is this lovely scene of a man and a woman. We only see him from behind, and then largely the man's cloak. And a little child, four or five years old, with a red cap on, looking backwards towards us. They're looking forward toward the vision, heaven. And look at that arch here. The arch was one of the most significant developments in architecture when it occurred. And because it does the impossible, it creates a circle where gravity would have all those stones fall down. So here we have the Ten of Pentacles, the perfection of the physical plane. And this is the ability of the mind to perfectly control matter, to create heaven on earth, to take anything that is imperfect or deformed and render it perfect. Now the child, again, this echoes the Seven of Rods, where I talked about the lowest three rods represent the law of economy, the middle three rods represent the law of attraction, and the upper rod represents the law of synthesis. The three merge into one. Well, here we have the Father, the Mother, and the little baby Jesus. So we have the Father and the Mother working together, and the law of economy represents our consciousness controlling matter. So it's always looking back towards the earth plane. It is the higher levels of our being may have an awareness of Valhalla, Nirvana, heaven, whatever you want to call it, the ideal. But there's a part of us that must always be involved in making life better, more spiritual on the physical plane. That's the enormous blessing of the law of economy. It gives us the means and the technique to safely, sanely, maturely work with the events of daily life and maintain our balance and achieve our goals. All right, I'm going to unmute again and entertain comments and questions here. Anybody at all? Comments or questions? Law of economy.
Carl, just a comment. This is Dorothy.
Sure.
With people that go into business or a home business or, you know, running a company, are they learning the law of economy more so perhaps than other people because of the nature of, pursuing business opportunities?
Well, one would hope so, but any profession actually gives one the opportunity to learn the law of economy because we're trying to translate our inspiration and our ideas into productivity. And that happens in education, in church, and in any pursuit. So it's not just business that provides these opportunities. Other comments or questions? Anybody? Well, that's it for this session. I thank everybody, and we'll do this again in 2 weeks, and see you on Wednesday for the next races of life. Good night.
Good night. Thanks so much.
Good night.
Good night, everyone. Good night.